You can start anytime.
Right. Okay, I would like to go back, since we've had this one little break, and just recoup on a couple things.
Okay.
The sister that you've been talking about so much, who obviously had a great deal of influence in your life and was very supportive.
We only
know her as sister. What is her name?
Cecilia.
Yes. And she went to college.
Yes, she, at that time, in fact, I have her diploma. When she, at that time, a young woman could go right from, it was almost the grade school, to what they called the normal college, which ultimately became Hunter College. And I think in 5 years, she was able to complete, at that time, high school and get a degree, which was not, though, really recognized, because later on she went back to New York University to get a degree. But when I looked at the subjects and her grades, I can assure you that what she completed in 5 years, the average university student does not have. I mean, she.
What was her major?
Well, it was a general college, but for example, her subjects, Latin and German and philosophy and what is it. So she was, there was no question about her brilliance and the capability, because I think it was, maybe as I looked, I finally saw a transcript of the college record. I think there are maybe with just one exception, it was straight A's. So she was out.
Did she work or did she teach?
She taught and then ultimately became an assistant principal.
Where?
In the New York City school system.
And what was she married?
No.
Your brother in Texas, the
yeah.
oil
yeah.
Texan, what is his name?
Morris.
Morris. He is living or
he's? No, he's dead.
Could you tell us a little bit more about this Malamud?
Malamud. Well, it was born.
What was his name?
Well, let's see. Kornhausen. At that time they used that word. Ignatz Kornhausen. But you have to think of
it. Was he like a Sunday school teacher?
No, because.
He was a bar mitzvah.
He was bar mitzvah, and you studied. He taught me the Hebrew. Unfortunately, not as they do now, which I think is certainly the preferable method so that I could really understand the Hebrew, but how to read the Hebrew, because the big emphasis then, perhaps no, was I'm just praying. And then the Bible, and something of the Talmud. But it wasn't as much his influence, but the influence of the family. And he had two daughters. There was nothing romantic about this because the daughters were much older than myself. But he had his two daughters, and his wife was an invalid. She was a coronary patient. And then I think it was his wife's sister who also took an interest in me. And they lavished attention and affection, so that when supposedly I was studying the Talmud, they would teach me how to play casino and
all those important things.
All those important things, solitaire, and gave me something of a home environment, and I always came away with a tremendous feeling of affection for them.
When you married, moved to Chicago,
yeah.
and you were working there,
mm-hmm.
Did you start raising a family at that time?
No, we didn't have a youngster. We were married in 28, and our youngster was born in 1933. I was always reluctant, and I'll say this, long as we're supposed to be very candid in these recitals, I had been very sensitive about human suffering, and as a boy, it's seen a great deal in New York, and because New York City at that time even right now, I guess it's a rather strange combination. You can live, let's say, in the middle class section right around the corner. You could have extreme poverty and misery, and that because I was very impressionable, it made quite an effect upon me and my own values and philosophy. And I'd be reluctant to have children, seeing the suffering of some people, not uniformly. But you see, I saw what happened to some of these immigrants. Some of them did well. Some of them, though, had a horrible time, regardless of these great stories of success in America. So some of them went through a lot of suffering. And, you know, they just didn't make the adjustment to the United States. And I felt very, very compassionate towards them. Because I didn't see the equity, the justification of how you could reason out, even though I was quite observant, how you could reason it out. So I was, I'd always been reluctant about having children. I'm telling you this very frankly, so since I guess you want to be insightful as to, as to what molded a person's life.
Absolutely, absolutely. So your first child was born in
33, and then
was that male, female?
Male.
His name?
His name was Richard. Richard, and he lived until just 37. There was some rare brain ailment with, because later on he had an evaluation of the autopsy result from the Department of Pathology at the University of Michigan. I happened to be engaged in some project in Michigan, and I saw an internist, and he sent the department this report to the chairman of the pathology department of the University of Michigan, who indicated this was a very rare ailment. But the youngster only survived until 37.
And did you have any other children?
Yes, then we didn't have any. And then, you see, we ultimately, I was in the consulting, well, here I'm sort of crossing over probably.
Sorry.
It's some of your outline there. And after we had moved to Washington, which we ultimately did because I entered the government service in Washington, then we had one youngster in 1940 and another youngster in 1943.
And their names?
The older, the one that was born in 1940 is Robert, and the one in 1943, Mark, M-A-R-C.
And how did your life growing up influence you as a father with them,
well,
towards them?
Hard to say. I mean, that's a rather incisive question you have there as to how it affected me. I suppose I came away with the attitude that that because you were. We either a father or mother, that the children owe no obligation to you. I never indulged in the philosophy that you should thank your mother or father for having brought you into the world. Feeling, after all, many of us don't have such easy going in the world, and you don't have much of a choice as to whether you're brought into it. And so I suppose that tended to affect my attitude. Also, because after the time that the two other children were born, let's see, I was in my 30s then, and was rather well on my way to Korea. So that might have affected my attitude and the relationships between them and myself. I don't think I was. A very effective father, if I were making a self-evaluation. I would feel that there were definite inadequacies on my part.
You must have had some strong influence because besides you being listed in Who's Who in America, your son is listed right underneath you.
Yeah, well,
so there had to have been some very positive influence
maybe so. Maybe so, of course. I always say my son is the scholar in the family, and I'm more of the practitioner because he is really a true scholar.
All right, which son are we speaking of?
Robert.
Robert, that's
right.
Right. And Robert, could you tell us a little bit about what he does?
Well, he's a professor of history at the University of Colorado in Boulder. His specialty is modern German history, and he's at very good success within the academic field. I think his talents have been recognized very well by the University of Colorado, both in terms of his promotion. He became a full professor at a rather young age, I forget which year, but I was impressed with the fact that he was advanced rather rapidly and is held in high regard. Of course, as you know, in the academic world, publications are considered a very, very important basis for recognition and advancement. He's had a series of publications, both books and articles, and I might say is very articulate, both in written form and orally, and is considered one of their better instructors at the University of Colorado.
And what does Mark do?
Mark has had a little time in getting adjusted, and he finally wound up in Israel dealing with autistic children, and we thought he might make that a career in Israel, but with the uncertainty in Israel and the fact that if he wanted to stay on as a permanent resident, he'd have to subject himself to military service, he was somewhat reluctant on that score. He gets failed sometimes not having, whether mechanical aptitude or physical agility, as much as they might expect in the Israeli military. He felt very sensitive, and so he had that problem that he was using up the time you can spend in Israel. You know, it accumulates if you get a permit to stay in Israel, even as a temporary visitor, then that's recorded in your records, and after it amounts to a certain number of years, then you have to either enact a Fisher cut date, decide do you want to stay there permanently or you better get out of the country, because then you become a permanent resident, and a permanent resident becomes subject to the military duty. That's been one factor. Another factor has been that type of program he was interested in, dealing with autistic children, those social programs have been pretty well cut back in Israel because of the defense budget. So he stayed, after my wife died, he went back to Israel for a while and then came back here. And then there was a question of, was he going to make a permanent switch? And he decided for the time being he would not. And what he's done now, he's developed an unusual, call it practice, and I don't know how it will work out, and that is counseling people who are terminally ill. He had started that because he was working with some of the youngsters at Children's Hospital, not as an employee, but sort of as a volunteer.
Is that in Pittsburgh?
In Pittsburgh, and started dealing with youngsters who were either terminal cases, of course, a number, perhaps a significant number of Children's Hospital, or youngsters who have gone through very serious ailments, perhaps sometimes even resulting in amputations, and he does have that empathy with these youngsters, and he then converted that into this practice of counseling, and right now I think it's primarily older people who are terminally ill, because as you perhaps know, not only doctors, but nurses very frequently are unable to deal with the phenomenon of a dying patient. I mean, it's strange, but they feel very uncomfortable. You know, after all, they feel
that
they're there.
When did he come back to Pittsburgh?
Well, let's see. Finally, he came back in 1980. Let's see, my wife died in 81, and then he went back to Israel for a while, and then he came back to, he was in 80. Then he went back again, and finally returned in 83, early in 83.
You say your wife died in 1981?
81, yes.
Was she in ill health?
Yes, she had her first coronary attack in 81. Yes, that's right, 81.
All right, now
let's,
I'm...
No, let's see, did I say she died in 81?
81.
No, she had it in 77. I'm wrong on it. That's good. That's right. That's wrong. 77. That's right. Because I remember that she died 4 years after her first husband. Mm-hmm.
So you have been living alone since 1981?
Well, no, I did. Well, I was living alone, and then I was married. I call it a very short period. Married in, it was in November of 83. And that marriage did not last very long. We separated a few months after the marriage, and there was a formal divorce in I think it was dated August of 84.
so you're back to batching.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, now what I would like to do is, how are we on time?
You only have maximum 10 minutes.
All right.
10 minutes on the tape, max.
What I would like to do now, because your career has been so varied, is start with, I'm sure that you probably gave a lot of thought to this write-up that was in Who's Who, which I want to ask you about. So I would like to basically start with that and go through the different jobs that you have had.
Okay.
But let's begin with, how does someone get written up in Who's Who in America and Who's Who in the World of 1984?
Well, I suppose the publishers of these various biographical volumes solicit suggestions from others, or they perhaps their name comes to their attention because they're mentioned in an article, and then you receive a notice that that you that you have been suggested, or they are considering you for inclusion, and will you then send in a biographical statement? Well, sometimes I know I get a host of it. I don't say that with any egotism, but some of them are just straight money-making propositions. And sometimes you reply. Now, for example, I did get a request. I've received two requests from Who's Who in American Law, but I finally became so tired of filling out these darn statements, I decided I didn't know it was worth the trouble. So what you do then is fill out the biographical statement and return it to the publisher. You want to stop that phone?
Okay. Did you stop it?
I'll be down there. Is it okay if I come down in about 5 minutes?
I'll stop
there. Okay, because I have some people
in. Let me finish this question.
Okay. All right, we'll finish just with the Who's Who, and then we'll continue another
day. All right, it's just that they have...
That's fine.
We have some lawyers and others, so we have some legal and related problems in connection with the condominium. I happen to be the president.
All right, we were talking about going...
Who's Who. And so, and you send your biographical statement in, and then they decide. Now, I was in... First of all, I suppose originally I was in Who's Who in the Midwest, because when I saw some of my career was in Chicago. Then, of course, I left the Midwest, and I came here, and after I was teaching a few years, then I received this word from Who's Who in America. And then, I don't know how long they've had Who's Who in the World, but then they said they sent a note on for people who've had some international experience, that would they submit biographies, but they particularly wanted people who had some international background. And so that is the basis. But then you have a multiplicity of these different Who's Who, although I guess the key ones are regarded Who's Who in America and Who's Who in the World.
You don't have to pay anything.
No, of course, the human ego being what it is, if you have the money, you buy one. Actually, What satisfies you more than if you sometimes feel despondent, you start looking at Who's Who and say, well, gee, was it, maybe I'm not so bad.
Very good point.
As I said, talk about ego massage, you give yourself
that's
a hand.
All right,
I think we'll stop here and we'll begin the next session with the job situation.
Okay.
All right?
Very good.